Okay, so we are on page 44. Actually, let's turn to page 43. So you just see an overview of this new topic we'll be covering. And the topic, in short, is a new topic. Mashiach, we finished. We're discussing Olam Haba. We're kind of going in order. We're going to see the expression Olam Haba, which literally means the world to come, is going to refer to a few different things. And we're going to turn to the Ramban, hopefully this class, if not next class, try to figure out exactly the different names for the different things that we generally call Olam Haba. Just like we call, you know, the five different parts of Neshama, but they have their own specific names. However, when it comes to Olam Haba, that's a go-to term, but there's other expressions, right, like Olam Neshamot we'll talk about, and Gan Eden, and Yom HaMashiach, which we already spoke about, and Tchias HaMesim, which will be pretty much the conclusion of this course. Okay? So we're going to go slowly, break it down, nice and simple, look at all the sources. So we're going to begin on page 44. Page 44. So we're going to begin with, coincidentally enough, this week's Parsha. Look at that. It all works out. Oh, by the way, as a side point, I think I'm the only person who noticed this. You know, they always say what happens in the Parsha is relevant to what's happening in the world. Heard that idea before, right? There's a certain connection between the Parsha. You know, you can hear this as well. There's a great connection between the Parsha or the Haftorah, what's happening in the world, Mr. Schechter. So I was looking through the Haftorah this week as it was being read. I don't usually prepare the Haftorah. I usually read through the Sedra with Rashi, which is a good thing to do, by the way. And I look at the Haftorah, and the Haftorah tells the story of a lady. And this lady was very, very poor. And we are told by Chazal that she was actually the wife of Avadia the prophet. And it says in this week's Haftorah we just read that she had so little money, she went to Elisha Hanavi, Elisha the prophet, and said, I need some money. He said, no problem. Get as many vessels you can, and we're going to fill them with
oil.
Oh, and they're pouring and pouring. And you know what? She has so much oil to be poured that she runs out of vessels and has to go to her neighbors to borrow the vessels as well, which happened as well. People had to go borrow vessels. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I didn't have a
generator. Oh, I see. Yeah, well, I did, actually. Okay. So, this week's Parsha, which happens to be... Chayei Sarah is this week's Parsha. It's what?
That was my
daughter. Oh, very nice. How old was Sarah Menu when she died? 127 is correct. You know, I'll tell you a quick side story over here. Rabbi Akiva was teaching a class, and they said that his students were falling asleep in his class, which makes me feel great, because if Rabbi Akiva's students could fall asleep in his class, what chance have I got? And I thought, what if they fall asleep in my class? Anyway, so he asked his students a completely unrelated, seemingly an unrelated question. And he said, how many provinces did Esther Hamalka own? How many provinces? And the answer was 127. Because you met Achashverosh. We know Achashverosh was a ruler, Mahodu and Kush, from India to Ethiopia, if that's what it's referring to. And he had control over those. So when she married him, she took control as well, being his queen, of 127 provinces. So he says, tell me why Esther merited to own 127 provinces and lands all over the world. As I tell you why. Because her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, Sarah Imenu, lived for 127 years. And she was like, well, what's the connection between 127 years and 127 lands? Said Rabbi Akiva to his students, it shows us the importance of time. If you treat every year as important as a country, every month as a town, every day as a small city, and every hour as a small community, that's the way to look at it. He says Sarah Amenu was so careful with every moment of her time. That's why it breaks down her years, as we're going to see over here as well, into 7 years, into 20, into 100. She was careful through those are considered three phases of life. Up to seven, childhood, which in our generation goes to probably 27, but you get the idea. Then 20, which is seen as a next part of life, and then to old age, right? Or to the time of development as opposed to learning. So he says, that's how careful you have to be with time. And that's what he told the students. Don't sleep in my class, because time is precious. As Rav Moshe Feinstein used to say, there's an expression in English, yeah, I'm going to kill time. He says, that's ritzicha. That really is killing. That's murder. Time for us is a very, very important thing. Right? Equal to that of space and land, which we put so much significance to. Okay, and on that note, we're going to turn to the end of the parasha. And the end of the parasha is on page 44, funnily enough. And it talks about the death of Avraham Avinu. And look at the words very carefully. We're going to go through slowly. And let's see what this verse has to do with the idea of Olam Haba. And it says, Vayigva Avraham Avinu, I guess expired, Vayomat, and he died. Avram, Beseva Tova, at a very mature age. Zakein, he was old. Vesaveya, he was content. Vyasef El Emav, and he was gathered to his people. Vayikburu Oto Yitzchak VeYishmael. Yitzchak and Yishmael buried him. By the way, Yishmael, who's that? That's his son. Wasn't Yishmael the one who was sent away with his mother Hagar, also known as Keturah, because she was a very special person, like incense is special, so too Hagar was. Wasn't he sent away? What do they learn out from here? Anybody know? That Yishmael, before the end of his life, while Avraham Avinu was still alive, did Shuvah. And actually, some learn out from here that the Muslim nations who are descendants of this individual Yishmael, they say, will also do Shuvah first among the other nations. Okay? So Yishmael being present and being involved in Kibra Va'aim, burying his father and then in his life, shouldn't surprise you, because he did Shuvah at the end of his life and actually came back. Banav, his children, El Marat HaMachpela. What is that? What's Marat HaMachpela? That is, what is it? Where is it, first of all? Marat HaMachpela, what is it, Brooklyn?
Hebron.
Yes, Hebron is absolutely correct. Kiryat Arba is also how it's referred to in the Torah and the Mepharshim, right? Because there are four groups who are Kiryat Arba, four pairs, zugos, that are buried over there. Who are they? Adam and Chava. Abraham and Sarah. Yitzchak and Rivka. Yaakov and Leah. Where's Rachel? Right, she's in Kever Rachel. That's probably a good place for her to be, isn't it? Yes. Right, she's in... Where is that?
No?
Yeah, we're outside Yerushalayim in... Anybody? When you go to... Where are you going? When you go visit her, you're visiting Bethlehem. Bethlehem. You said it? I didn't hear you. Sorry. Very good. Yes, in Bethlehem. She's outside. She was not buried. By the way, it says in this week's parsha, as we're on the topic, the name Kavor, right? Kever, seven times. But there's only... nine times. Nine times. So how does it... Who's the ninth who's buried in there? Anybody who else is buried in there? Esav's head. Right. It's those four couples and Esav's head rolled in there. He was killed. Esav was killed by Hushim ben Dan, one of the tribal leaders. And he was deaf. He saw some argument happening over this burial of Ravino. He then took his sword and cupped his head off, and his body stayed outside, but his head went in, because his head was good, as we'll see in a second. His head was good. It's his body. It was his goofed, as my teacher when I was a kid used to say. His goofed. You see that? So he was outside. Okay? And by the way, just as a last point, how did Avraham Avinu know where Adam and Chava were buried? How did he know that? Something happened, and there's a hinted reference to it in the parasha earlier on, not this week's parasha. So we know that he had three guests who came to visit him. And we know that he ran to them, And then he said, I'm going to bring you great food. What food did he serve them? What does the Torah say? Bakar, meat. Actually chose, it gave them tongue, which is the best part of the animal, they say. I can't eat tongue. It's too prickly. They say it's actually the most delicious part of the animal, actually. They eat tongue. I can't lick anything that could lick me back. It's just, you know, for me it's got to be like a one-way thing, you know. So we went there. So the I think the Arizal says that in the merit of running to serve these guests, for the bakar, rearranged the letters and he found the kever of Adam and Chava, which he ended up buying for his own wife, Sarah Imenu. Okay? And that was in Stay Ephron. Yeah? Could be there's a tradition, I don't know. Could be. I don't know. But in the merits of that mitzvah, I think the idea is that in the merits of mitzvahs, certain things are revealed to us. I think that's one of the ideas that comes out of it. Okay. This was the field of Ephron. Right? Ephron was seen as the big cheat of history, right? They compare Avram and Ephron are actually compared in Pirkei Avot. How are they compared? Avram Avinu was known as someone who said little, but did lots. Right? Said little. I'll give you a little bit of mayim, a little bit of lechem, a little pas, lechol yisa, a little bit of bread to eat, and he gives them a big feast. Ephron says lots, but does little. He says, oh yeah, between me and you, this small kever, ends up sending it for a vast amount of money. Today's equivalence of millions of dollars. Okay? See, someone does lots. Ephron, he was the person who owned the field where Machpelah was founded. Okay? And we should learn a number of halachot, actually, from this individual, Ephron, in the Talmudic tractate of Kiddushin. Okay. So El Sedei Ephron, Ben Sochar, Hachiti was a Hittite, Ashal Pnei Mamre, it was on the plains of Mamre. Let's look at those words for a second. Seems to be, look inside the verse itself, look inside, don't look at me. Look inside, you can look at the Hebrew or the English. Something seems to be, even if it works in the English, out of order over there. Out of order. What's out of order over there? In the relation to the demise of Avram Avinu. I'll take an answer. Anybody? So it says, Vayigva, he expired. Vayamat, and he died. And he said he was old. And then it says, he was gathered to his people. Vayasef Elamav. And then it said he was buried. What exactly is this gathering to his people all about? What is this gathering to his people that the Torah is talking about? It can't be his death because he's already dead. It can't be his burial because that happens after he is buried. So what exactly is happening over here? So you're going to have to say, the Chazal actually look upon this and they say this is one of the hinted, and we'll see why, this is going to be very important. There are hinted references to Olam Haba. Okay? There are hinted references to Olam Haba. And this is one of them. And we're going to see actually that one of the themes we'll look at over the next couple of weeks, God willing, is that the idea of the next world is not mentioned explicitly in the five books of Moses. In the Torah. In the Chamosh HaChamshei Torah, it is not mentioned. And we're going to see a number of reasons why that will be. But there are hinted references, and this is one of them. And this is one of them. So this, V'yasef Elamav, which happened before he died, which happened before he was buried, actually means, as we'll see in a second, something was happening to his neshama, to his soul. And why that specific reference of gathered to his people, we'll see as well. The same is said as Yitzchak, V'yuyimei Yitzchak, Mashano Shimonim Shana, he lived 180 years old. He lived 5 years longer than his Abba. Vayigva Yitzchak V'yamas, V'yasef Elamav, Zakein Usfayamim, and he was also gathered to his people, V'yigboroso, Esav Yaakov Banav. We have the same thing, and his kids buried. By the way, what's unusual over there? Who's burying him? Esav. What's Esav on the scene? Esav was Esav HaRasha. Why is he doing it? Why is he there? His only... Absolutely. Esav was the master of Kibud Avim, which is why Yitzhak actually was actually fooled by him, because Esav actually was trying very, very hard to impress himself upon his father, and that was one mitzvah. That's actually one of the reasons that Yaakov was scared of meeting Esav. Why, what merit did Esav have that Yaakov should be scared? Yaakov was a great tzaddik. And the answer is, he was scared because Yaakov was away all this time, and his son Esav was serving Yaakov the entire time. So he was scared. That merit kibud av aim. So we can say possibly that that's why Esav was present over here at the burial of his father. Happens to be tradition, the one thing he was good at. Yeah.
This could be like an open casket, like the people come say bye to their leader.
It doesn't seem to be the idea. No, we don't really do that. Not a Jewish thing, no. Doesn't seem to be. Okay? I mean, it could have been, but it doesn't seem to be the custom among the Jewish people. So, says the Toldos Yitzchak, let's have a look, second source. We'll go nice and slow. V'yasaf elamav, gather to his people. What is Torah speaking about? Hu al ha-nefesh. This is referring to the nefesh. Shin asaf, which is gathered together. Im nefashot kerovav ha-tzadikim. To the other souls that are close to that neshama that they see. You may have heard of stories of NDE, near-death experience, which is getting a lot of coverage and a lot of actual scientific study being done into it. And there are a couple of things you just keep hearing again and again and again and again. One of them is this tunnel, going through a tunnel, which I heard from a certain individual rabbi that, well, actually, this is actually a Jewish concept, that all tefillahs go through the Kosel and through the Makom HaMikdash, but all souls that leave this world, I'm assuming Jewish souls, actually go through Ma'at HaMachpelah. Right? That is the earth that gathers them all. So that could be the tunnels under there. I heard from a certain Kabbalist, this is actually the neck. The Shema goes through the neck, and that could be that tunnel. I do not know. I've never seen any sources on it. I'm just sharing something I heard. And there's always a light. I always see some kind of light, yeah? And they always say this, because I see my relatives, you know? Which for some people is great news. And for others, okay. So, Im nefashot kerovav ha-tzadikim, he sees all the righteous relatives that have passed before him or her. Shekeshah nefesh beguf hi nifredet mishar nefashot shehem bli guf. For when the soul is in the body, it is separated from all these other souls. Right? When the neshama comes to this world, it is trapped, if you will, inside the body, right? Inside the body. Uka shinifra adam in a guf. But when the neshama leaves the guf, leaves the body, nitchabra im shar nefashot, it's going to attach itself, or get close to, I guess. I don't know how two souls get together, really. Shehen nifradot min a guf kamoha. So the neshama ends up getting close to the other souls that it is close to. And that is the experience of seeing family who have since left this world. Okay? And that is the idea. That's why the expression of the Yasef Elamav, gathered to his people, refers, that's the Torah hinting, be merames, to the souls that left this world beforehand. So you get to see all the deceased grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents. And I don't know how far back it goes, but we'll get to connect. Yeah. So we're talking about Avram's soul, and we're learning from here, this is one of the biblical proofs that the neshama goes somewhere after it leaves this world. And it's a biblical proof that it comes from the Torah. The Torah itself is making a hinted reference that Avram's neshama was gathered to his people. It can't be referring to his actual body, because he's dead, and is about to be buried. So what is it was referring to? It's referring to the attachment of his neshama to those that came before him. And that is what the sources seem to say. Okay? This is a biblical. We'll see Talmudic ones and Midrashic ones. But just to show you that it is hinted at, but not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. And as we said, there's a reason why not. Yes?
Why is it not possible that they brought his body to all the people?
Like,
that's what I thought it meant.
Yeah, there seems to be, as most people look at it. So the answer is that that's not really done. Body's taken, it's not paraded around, Right? We know that the soonest person dies, you have to bury them as soon as possible. Right? Hopefully, b'oso yom, if you're able to, on that day itself. So it seems to be the Chazal didn't even consider the fact that the body would be paraded around. And this is actually a veiled reference to Olam Haba.
No, but what if he wasn't in the same place as them?
As who?
His people could be Yitzchak and Yishmael.
Well, they're mentioned where it says he was gathered to his people.
To his people could mean his sons. His body was brought to his sons and his sons buried him.
Doesn't seem to be what it's saying. I mean, it could be, but it's not seem to be what it's saying. It's he gathered to his people, and who are his people? Okay. You're saying that's the people who died before him. That seems to be what they're trying to say, yeah.
Isn't it possible that if it was, talking about his body, they would have said, his body was gathered to his people? It's he was.
Yeah, gathering to your people isn't really a real reference you see too often in terms of, gathering to actual, living beings. That's the thing. It's incongruous with that, you know? You don't gather people around the body. You take the body to the kever, and you bury it. And the people will go to the kever, I guess. You know, that you'll see the people go to the burial place. It's an idea of gathering together. See? All right? Okay, let's see some more sources. We see from Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles, and he says, Vayashav ha'afar al ha'aretz, and keshaya ha'ruach tashuv el Elohim asher netana. And the dust returns to the earth as it was, that's the body. However, the spirit returns to Hashem, who gave it. Okay, so we take this as a granted, but these are the sources that discuss the idea that the guf goes down and decomposes, but the real you, right, the neshama of the person, lives on. There is an extraordinary... Yes. Yeah. Too many reincarnation classes with me. No, that's referring... I mean, it could be. I don't think so. It could be. It's referring to other individuals. People who are close to it. People who are close to it. It's who it's referring to. Okay, let's look at another source. So this is from the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel. And it tells an extraordinary story about a certain... I guess we can call her a witch of sorts. Or some say a charlatan. But either way, something happens over there. And look what happens. And we know that Shmuel HaNavi, Samuel the prophet, mace, he dies. The Yisbedulo, and they were maspid him, they gave a eulogy for him. So he's gone. Dead, buried, eulogized. Kol Yisrael, all the Jewish people, we know that Shmuel was a great leader of the Jewish people, and he traveled around, and he inspired people and taught people and rebuked them as well. And he was born in a place called Ramah Be'iro, which was his hometown. Okay? Okay. Now, something happens. We know that Shaul was the first king of the Jewish people. Right? King Saul was the first king. And he was having a little bit of trouble with his kingship at the time. Okay? So he found out about this certain woman who had the power to communicate with the dead. Now, there is a difference of opinion. Some say that she did not have this power. She was just a moneymaker. And she would, use this as, she's a charlatan. Right? Which is pretty much the Rambam. You know, all these people who try to take money from you. All these, clairvoyants. How do they make their money, by the way? Every street corner's got, another palm reader, another clairvoyant. How much are they charging? $5 a palm? Come on. You can afford Manhattan rent on that? Okay. So he goes to visit such a woman. One opinion, there are other opinions, however, who say that she really had this power. Right? Such a power exists. And she was able to communicate with the dead. I don't know. I don't know. It could be. It doesn't seem to say that she was Jewish. It doesn't seem to say. So King Saul wants to talk to Shmuel HaNavi, but Shmuel HaNavi is dead. So he goes up to her, and it says, page 45, V'toymer Isha, et mi alelecha, who should I raise for you? Who do you want to talk to? Right, you want Elvis? You want Martin Luther, who do you want? Martin Luther King? Who do you want? Michael Jackson? Whoever you want, okay? I mean, doubtfully them, but you know. Vayome Eshmol Halili. Bring me up Samuel the prophet. Vatomer Ha'ishael Shaul. Ha'elokim Re'isi Oyle Min Ha'aretz. And she says, whoa, I'm seeing a great man ascending from the earth. Now, she at this point, we are told, freaks out. Now, Shaul cannot see this individual. She can, supposedly. There's two opinions. One opinion was that normally she never saw people. So two sides. Normally she never saw people. So this time she actually did. And so she freaked out. That's one opinion. According to the opinion that she did have this actual power, was able to communicate with the dead, she knew this was different because normally, I always forget this, normally the people she saw came up feet first and revealed themselves. He, however, came up head first, or vice versa. I always forget which way around it is. Feet first, head first. But normally, when you resurrect, supposedly, I'm not in the, you know, communicate with the dead. My wife says she is, when she tries to wake me up every morning. But according to the opinion that she did have that power, normally you came up feet first, and over here it came up head first. So she knew she was actually bringing up someone very, very important, and she got extremely scared. Raise up Shemufi, and the woman said to Shaul, I saw a great man. Right? Vayomela mata rovet omer ish zakein, an elderly person, olav hu ote me'il v'yedashul kishmul hu. And Shaul knew, right, from that identification that she gave him, this was actually Shmuel. So what does he do? He bows down to him. Right? He's brought back the soul back into this world from the next world. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. And Shmuel is actually very upset with him. And he says, Lama hirgaztani la lo sosi. Why did you disturb me to raise me up? He's not happy coming back. This was not what he expected to happen. He did actually appear to him at that time. That we know. Okay? So the only question we had was whether she had experienced that before or not. So we even see from the prophets that people are in the next world. And in this case, I mean, evil somehow to make it back over here. Okay? This is a story from Tanakh. Yeah. this is from the Book of Shmuel. It didn't get more legit than that. After that, there was a whole episode. We'll read through if you want. He promises she's not going to be punished for doing this. She does it. She brings up Shmuel. She said, I saw a fantastic man come out of the earth. He's covered with this mantle, this beautiful cloak. He knew who it was. And he says, why have you done this? Why did you bring me up? And he says, in great distress, and he said he was worried because basically the Pelishtim were making war against him. And he felt as though HaKadosh Baruch Hu had left him. And no one was helping him. No dreams and no prophets were there to help him. And then he tells him the bad news that it's over. Kingship is going to be handed over to David HaMelech. That was the information. This is the same prophet who anointed him, made him the king, told him that the Malchus, because of a certain mistake that Shaul made when it came to dealing with a Malik, the kingship was about to move to David HaMelech, which also means it was about to move tribes, right? Because David HaMelech was the first king from the tribe of Yehuda. And Shaul was the tribe of Binyamin. So, that was the problem, which is why many, many years later, great descendants of these two people, of Shaul, was someone called Mordechai, Ish Yumini, the Benjaminite, and he ended up trying to finish off what his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather Shaul started, and he had to go to war against Haman, who was a descendant of Amalek. So that battle of Shaul against Amalek, which he didn't finish off, his great-great-descendant Mordechai from Shav Binyamin had tried to finish off with Haman Ha'agagi, the Agagite. So actually that finished off. And that's the way that story ended, yeah.
Yeah, but Why does Shmuel say to raise me up? Isn't it more like to bring me back down?
I think raise me up from the dead. I think that's what I was referring to. La'alos osivim. Exactly. Yeah, we can assume he's in Shemayim. You know what I'm saying? He didn't go downwards, we can assume, right? That was an upward trajectory for him. But that, yeah, we assume that, right? Okay. So we're going to look at the next few class. Oh, yeah.
Are we supposed to, do people actually, can they raise people from the dead?
Raising people from the dead, that's something like Tchesa Mesa. Listen, the Tanaim, right? Every Tana was raising people from the dead. You know what I'm saying? Bring people who are dead back to life again. This is different. This is bringing a person from the next world and bringing it back over here. Are there people today could do that? I don't think so, no. And again, according to the Rambam, it's all mumbo jumbo anyway. No one's able to do it at all.
Is it like a prophet that does that?
No.
No. Like a
no. I guess it's a skill. You go to, Hogwarts, I guess, and just learn how to, raise the dead or something. I don't know. Get in your broom and do it. Not you, Amanda. I'm just saying a person. But jokes aside, actually, it's totally forbidden. The Torah itself forbids all forms of the occult. We actually do a couple of classes on this. The Torah lists the various practices of some nations, the way they used to communicate with the dead and bring people back. Okay? And it's forbidden. According to the Ramban, it's forbidden according to everyone. According to the Rambam, it's forbidden because it's all nonsense, people making money from you. According to the Ramban, and I think Rabbeinu Bechaya, it is real, but it leads people off to get involved in Avodah Zorah. So the Torah says it's forbidden. Why it's forbidden? Because it's true or nonsense is a machlokes among the Rishonim. Among the Rishonim, it's a machlokes whether it's because it's complete nonsense and just people trying money from you, or because it's real and leads people astray. At least people are straight. But the Torah itself lists a bunch of things people used to do, right? There's Ovin, Yidoni, various things people used to do, unusual practices to try to bring back and communicate with the dead. Yeah.
What's your opinion?
Well, my opinion? Yeah. I don't really have an opinion, to be honest with you. I mean, not on this. I don't have an opinion. I have had a couple, I probably shouldn't have this on tape, actually, but I have had a couple of experiences. By the way, the Torah tells you why it's forbidden. Anyone know what the Torah says? Why should you not do this kind of stuff? Like go to visit psychics and all this kind of stuff? Torah does not say that. It may lead to that, but it says, it gives a specific expression. Tamim tiyeh im Hashem alakach. You should be perfect with Hashem. Which means you should have perfect faith in Hashem, not trying to look into the future. There is a natural desire of people to want to know the future. Right? It's a natural desire. But we are meant to have faith in Hashem, perfect faith, tamim tiyem Hashem alakecha, perfect faith that we don't always try to pretend the future. My sister had a good friend who went to visit a psychic, and I don't forget this, and the psychic told this individual that when you're older, and he gave a certain year, right, you're going to kill someone. And I never forget this. And we actually had it on tape. I never forget this, because he recorded it, and many years later, this individual actually accidentally run someone over and killed a guy, right? And I think it was that year, if I remember correctly. So I remember at the time I was freaking out. But at the time, so what's that going to do for you? For some reason, there's a gezeira min hashamayim that you have to kill that individual. Who knows why? It could be past lives. It could be a tikkun. I got no idea. But what does it do for you? Knowing that information, it just gives you tsaras. It doesn't actually help you. Plus, we know that any bad decree chas v'shalom can be changed. We have the power. Through our actions, through our mitzvahs, and through our actions, to change chas v'shalom any bad decree upon us, any bad decree, any gezeira, is able to be mevatel. We know that. We know that we're able to mevatel certain things. So, if Meredith is asking me whether people do have psychic power, I personally have spoken to various individuals, told me certain things about myself, which, this is many years ago, were uncanny. But I do not go to them, and I do not recommend anyone else goes to them. Okay, most of these people are completely treif. Yeah.
There used to be this Sephardi principle when I was in lower school that would give people time.
So, look, we know there is certain powers people have, certain abilities we should say, which is actually a form of wisdom, right? The Zohar, I saw a whole chapter on it once, has a whole piece on looking at people's faces and to read the lines and knowing what they're about. Astrology, right? There's a big Talmud Chacham out there, someone's my Chavrusa of Glazerson, who writes a book on it. When we say that means learning about a person's abilities, what they have, that seems to be permitted. Trying to tell the future from these kind of things, that is frowned upon. That is frowned upon. So, in other words, when you open your newspaper and you read, like, you're, you know, Aquarius, you're going to meet some tall, dark, handsome, handsome stranger, and you're going to take, you know, midnight walks on the beach or something, this kind of thing, this is drivel. Okay, this is drivel. Because that cannot happen to the 12th of the population. But do certain people of certain tiers, certain leanings from the time they are born, right? Certain events happen. As we said, the word mazal tov comes from mazalot, from the stars. When you say mazal tov, you're not saying good luck. You're saying there's a certain, the astronomically things are, the stars are being aligned. Right? But we learn from Avraham Avinu that the Jewish people are above that. We are above the mazalot. Right, that's actually Mefresh Rashi. It's being Rashi because Avraham Avinu was taken out to look down upon the stars. They say we're above the stars. We don't have to be affected by the mazalot. We are above nature, the Jewish people. Mazal tov means that it should still be good. One interpretation is nizul, right? It should flow well. And the other is that still, when certain events happen, we hope that the stars are good when that happens. You know, it should be at the right time. B'sha'a tova, we say, right? It should be at a good time. Which, by the way, all stands for, I heard this section from a rabbi recently, B'li Shum Ayin Hara, B'sha'a, B'li Shum Ayin Hara. We have to do a class on Ayin Hara, by the way. Do you remind me? I've got to add it to the packet. I want to do a class on Ayin Hara as well. I've got to do that. We'll compare notes. Okay, one last source. Let's do source 5, and then we'll do a recap for the exam. So page 45, Ushmartem es chukosai. It says in the Torah, Vesmishpatai, Asher yaseotam, Hadam v'chaybem, ani Hashem. You shall follow my chukim and my mishpatim. You have to do them, right? V'chaybem. Now, v'chaybem is usually understood to be, you have to live for the mitzvahs. Okay, we're not expected to die for the mitzvahs. Right, we have to live for them. Okay, and actually we'll see when we do Hilchos Shabbos next semester, Mr. Hashem, those who join us, Chaybem is actually one of the reasons I had to break Shabbos, save a life. Okay? It's based upon those two words. However, the Sifra gives a different interpretation of V'chaybehem, you shall live through them. And it says, V'chaybehem, he said, that's L'olam Haba. So that's got to be, that is a reference to Olam Haba. The Im Toma B'olam Hazeh. If you want to say, that is Olam Hazeh, V'alo, Sofa Mesu. Chaybehem, you're not living because eventually you're going to die. It can't be referring to life of this world. Ha! Mani mekai v'chai behem le'olam haba. So when it says in the Torah, a person shall do and they shall live, the living can't be the living in this world because that's not living. Right? It's like the Jewish people. Call that a living? Okay, joke. V'chai behem must be referring to olam haba, the life of the eternal world where life is real and the everlasting life. I'm trying to give the English translation, but it always sounds too Christian. Okay? So that is a sifra based upon that pasuk, which is also another hint towards Olam Haba. Okay, on that note, let us do 15-20 minutes of preparation for our big midterm next week. And we'll start on page 2. And the format of the midterm will be short answers and multiple guess. Choice. Yeah. Short answers and multiple choice, yeah.
How many?
I haven't written the exam yet. I don't know. Anywhere from, I guess, 40 to 50? Something like that? Sound good? Questions, short answers and multiple choice. Yeah, mix it in. Yeah.
So, you said earlier you wanted to talk something about the footsteps of Mashiach when we got to it, so I was wondering what that is.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, let's see that right now. I will come to that, Mr. Maybe next class we'll touch upon that. Right. I did talk about that, yes. Ixid Mashiach. Well, I wanted to speak about that, yeah. Okay, next class we'll pull in. Yeah, remind me next class, please. I want to do that. Okay, so we started on page 2. We're going to move quickly, get your little... Stern girls are the experts of using highlighters, right? Highlighters, pens. We spoke about the Pasuk and talk about Adam and Rishon. And human mankind, Adam, was made from the Afar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu blew in through his nostril, Nishmas Chaim. So we said that we are made of two things, right? Yes.
Do we need to know the pesukim or
some the words, the pesukim. Yes, yeah. And things I wrote down are important. If I did them in Hebrew the first time, which I did with many pesukim, then you have to know the Hebrew. So, for example, a pasuk, you will need the Hebrew. The Hebrew from the Torah is not just Hebrew, it's code of information. Okay, and this is a classic example. So, yes,
the Hebrew.
No, but I will ask you a word. For example, I'll say, what does the expression Nishmas Chayim mean? You're expected to know that. Okay, and I'll just translate it, explain it. Okay, for example, okay? So, the Psukim, yeah. So, source one, yeah, you'll need to do that. The Ramchal spoke about this idea of the duality of mankind, of body and of soul, and he went into great detail on page 3 talking about how there is a constant battle, if you remember, a milchama, right, that is happening all the time between the guf and the neshama. Okay, and then he spoke about that is why we have two distinct periods of time, a time of work, a time of toil, and a time as avoida, and he had another time, zman kibul schar, right? Page 3, second box down, a time to receive reward, and that is not in this world, as we'll talk about actually in the coming classes, but just so you have it over there. Okay? And he says the two times are different, and the complete opposites. So read through that. Then we spoke about, okay, so what exactly happened to Adam Rishon? Was it always like that? Is this a was this plan A? Was it plan B? What exactly happened with the chait of Adam Rishon? Because when we see what happened to Adam Rishon, we'll understand what situation we are in today. 5773, right? Although it happened thousands of years ago. Okay? So Adam Rishon is going to be a part of the understanding we have to look at. Okay? And page 5 talks about the consequence, still the Ramchal, of Adam Rishon's transgression. Right? There was a consequence of that transgression. Right? What was the what was the consequence? What happened to him? Right? Why is that a fix-up? It's what he did. Okay? And then Samit was introduced into the world. Right? Spoke about death. Misa came into the world because of this. But we said, if you remember, that history comes full circle and ends up with Tchias HaMesim at the end of the 6,000 years, which the Ramchal speaks about in Derech Hashem. Okay? So then we said, fine, let's separate that out a bit. We spoke about both of them, let's separate it out. So we spent a little bit of time talking about the body, right? The guf itself, and we saw that the Gemara talks about the guf itself and says that it comes from the earth. But the Rambam says that we have to treat the body with respect. Okay, there's certain halachas that apply to the body, how we treat it, right? Actually, the Rambam in Hilchas Deos actually talks about how you feed it as well and how you exercise it, which we didn't go into too much detail. But there's a mitzvah to take care of the body itself. The body itself has within it, in its proximity to the neshama, a level of holiness, of kedusha. Okay? And on page 7, we have various descriptions, but none of them really like exact descriptions, because the neshama is not physical, obviously. But the Gemara makes certain similarities between the Neshama and Hashem. Because the Neshama is a part of Hashem, right? And that list can be found, that's from the Gemara in Brachas on page 7. Right? Hashem fills the world, the Neshama fills the body. Hashem sees but is not seen, so to the Neshama. Hashem gives nourishment to the entire world, the Neshama gives nourishment and life force to the body. Hashem is pure, the Neshama is pure. Okay? Hashem dwells in the chamber, so does the Neshama. And it says, let the one with these five come to these five. So that is a list of five. Then we spoke about the different levels of the neshama, which can be found on page 7 and page 8. So please look through your page 7 and page 8 to see the different levels of the neshama, what they refer to, and where they are found. And where they are found. So we said, fine. So what happens now? So what happens now is we've got to kind of figure out, how do we access the neshama? What's the point of it? So we spoke a lot about the idea of mitzvot. Okay? And we said the word mitzvah is related to the word savasa, which means to connect. It connects the body to the neshama, but also connects the neshama to Olam HaEmes and to Hashem. And we spoke about the idea of why mitzvot and why they're so detailed. And that's on page 10. We looked at various examples of mitzvot and how we're meant to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by doing mitzvot. Right? So the neshama we get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there to actually come close to Hashem's neshama, as it were. Our neshama come close to Hashem. Okay? And then actually we looked at a Rambam on top of page 11. Very important Rambam. And by the way, the way to study, the real way to study is not in class form. And the real way to study is not in the library with the headphones on. The way to study is one-on-one. As I always say, that's true in Torah, probably true in other subjects too. And they say, just like two knives sharpen themselves against each other, so too two people sharpen themselves against each other when they study one-on-one. So I recommend you find yourself a partner, a friend, a BFF if you will, and sit down and work through these sources and talk about them, discuss them, and try to figure out some of the language that is used, especially the Pesukim. Okay? That's how you probably should study this exam. So it's a very important Rambam, top page 11, comes from Hilchot Temura. And over there, he talks about the real reason for all the mitzvot from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he refers to him. Okay? And what they're actually meant to do for us. What is the ultimate reason for mitzvah? We spoke about that. And then we did a very important Sefer Chinuch. And we looked at a Hebrew expression of the Sefer Chinuch, that ki ha'adam nifal kafi polatav. A person is influenced by their actions. And we noted a contrast, because in the secular Western world, although now recently it's turning a little bit, people say, you fix your mind and everything else works out. And the Torah says a little differently. See, very differently. If a person actually changes their actions, that will actually change your personality. That's a very Jewish idea. And we spoke about the idea of mitzvah being an important part of that. We also listed, by the way, the Shevamis B'nai Noach, they're expected to learn. Okay? Because that's, we have our Tarag mitzvahs, which we're going to speak about, but the non-Jews have their Shevamis B'nai Noach, and I think it's very important. If the majority of the world has them, worth learning what the seven are. I'm not going to make you memorize 613, right? But the seven, I think everyone should have. We did that. Yeah, we did in this class. It's not in here. I did it outside. The Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach. I did it in this class. I listed them. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Ev Menachai. Berachas Hashem. Gezela. Dinim. Kelly Arias?
We didn't
have
stuff.
We'll throw into the final then. I'll let you off this time. I'm sure you didn't do them. Are you sure?
Yes.
If I find them in any of your notes, you better get rid of them very quickly, by the way, because I'll be checking your notes all day. All right. I did another class as well. I did the other class, for sure. I do every class. I mean, everyone should know them. It's important to know, no? Mistress of the Goyim's worth knowing. How they get Olam Haba, right? We said that, knowledge is getting Olam Haba, that's their method too. All right, we'll throw it in the end, don't worry. So then we spoke about, why the mitzvahs always physical, except six mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs are, involve actions. We spoke about that, why we need actions for them. Then there's a very interesting midrash, on Parshas Tazri on page 12, between Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus HaRasha. Look at that midrash, and what do we learn from that midrash? That's worth knowing. That's an important midrash which is quoted a lot. It's worth knowing and understanding. That's on page 12. The Ramban says mitzvahs have another function, and that is to strengthen our belief in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he gives an example of a mitzvah there as well. Right? And tries to link that to having emunah. Right? So the mitzvahs do that as well. Okay? And we spoke a little bit about reward for mitzvah. We spent actually a whole class, if you remember, discussing that. Right? Mitzvahs, they have reward, not have reward. We spoke a little bit about that, where the reward actually is for a mitzvah. So look at that. And then on page 14, we spoke a little bit about reasons for the mitzvot. Okay? Reasons for the mitzvot. And we see that trying to find reason for the mitzvot is actually a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Right? Try to understand why you do it. Right? We don't just eat matzah because my parents ate it. We have to try, we expect to try to understand what exactly does matzah represent. There's a mitzvah, discuss it to understand it. And then we spoke about the Jewish mitzvahs. That we did speak about, right? The mitzvahs for the Jewish people. We spoke about different types, right? Benam L'chaver, Benam L'makom, spoke about Daraisa, Drabonim, and we spoke about the mitzvahs which are Eidit, Chukim, and Mishpatim. So read through that, and the amount of mitzvahs, that's good stuff to know. Then we said, you know what, let's focus on one mitzvah. Let's focus on a mitzvah that we're all involved with, pretty much all the time, and is really connected to the neshama, although mitzvahs are. I wanted to find one that's really connected. So I said, let's look at kosher, and we learned through the idea of kashrut, and there's certain ideas we looked at according to the Kliyaka we looked at, and the very famous Gemara in Yoma of what happens to a person who eats non-kosher food. And you're expected also, as I mentioned then, to know your simanim, know your signs for kosher. Know your signs for kosher. What makes a kosher? Animal, bird, fish, cholent. It's kind of like expected knowledge, which you're expected to know. Yeah, I want a whole list. Osprey, owl, hawk. No. Yeah. But you should read through the list anyway. Read through the list anyway. Yeah. Where was that? The Chofetz Chaim. Yes, you should definitely. That's the amount of mitzvahs. Yep. That particular one, yeah.
Which one?
The Chofetz Chaim, that piece of Chofetz Chaim. That's from his introduction to Ruach HaLashon. It's actually talking about the neshama and the guf and their connection and the amount of mitzvahs. So that is important. Okay? So that was on page 16. Okay, page 17, the Gemara in Yoma, look through that. And there is a certain play on words. Page 17, note 4. And there's a Rashi, you have to learn that as well. And then the Ramban gives us fascinating connection of the deer of, this is a very important Ramban, page 18. Okay, the top one and the bottom one. Top one is, yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry. All three. Yeah, the middle one, I mean the middle. From Torah Hashem to Mima, and the bottom part from Devarim, Yudalad. Right? 14:21. Read through that Ramban. He speaks there about the idea of the way we even kill animals. A lot of that is also preventing the trait of cruelty. So the eating of certain animals, but also the treatment of animals he speaks about, may not be the reason, but that's definitely part of it, he says. Okay? And we'll look at a bit of Kabbalah, which we already looked at already on page 19, from the Rabbeinu Bechaya and the Shlach Kadosh, into what happens to a person. And then we start speaking about reincarnation. On page 21. We did. We spent a half a class talking about time between meat and milk. Yes. Thanks. No, it won't be the final. I won't be the final. That's fine. No. I mean, it's a good thing to know, but I'm not going to put it in the final and the midterm. Okay, page 21. So we started looking at the various sources. And we started with biblical sources, as we always do, towards this idea of Gilgul HaNeshamot, right? What the Torah sources seem to say about Gilgul. And we spoke about a very famous Zohar Ramban on a mitzvah called Yibum and Chalitza. I would have a little look into that mitzvah in general to know what it's about, and the opinion of the Zohar on that, and the Ramban as well. You have what to say about that. We spoke about the book of Yonah, which was the Vilna Gaon, saw as actually a metaphor. I would take a little dip into the ocean of Yonah, excuse the pun, and just have a little look over there to get a feel for it. You should have a look over there. I expect you to just get a feel of that. Page 23 already did earlier. So we spoke, what's the idea of reincarnation? What does it do? And we quoted the Arizal in his introduction to the Shar HaGilgulim, and he gave three reasons why Hashem would have such a thing called reincarnation, right? If it exists, which most people say it does exist. Bottom of page 23, top page 24. That was my American accent, by the way. It comes out Australian, but it's actually American accent. All right, your beauty. What? No, that really did before. That's actually just a quote from a piece before. Okay. Hey, day, day, nine, nine, nine. So those three reasons should be looked at, and the sources afterwards, just go a little bit more detail into that. And then we spoke about different forms of Gilgal that the Arizal brings down, and Sefer Haredim brought down a piece over there, and the Mishnah Brura. That's important. Okay, that's page 26, halfway down. Okay, he does talk about that. And the Ramchal and Derech Hashem also talks about this on page 27. Yeah, that's, it's more of a repetition or explanation of what was said before. And then we looked at the famous question of why bad things happen to good people, which the Vilna Gaon and Evan Shlemer, chapter 3, verse 5, speaks about. And various forms of injustice on page 27, halfway down. And then we even looked at something which the Mishnah Brura mentions at the bottom of page 28 as to why it could be that bad people suffer in this world and even premature death, chas v'shalom lo aleinu, could happen. Okay, then we went into the Mashiach, which was probably the bulk of the exam. That was just the four shpites. So for the Mashiach, we'll look at these sources and the handout. Read through it. And know it. So read that starts on page 31. Actually, 31, the Ramchal over there is not so important. We did it already, kind of thing. Page 32. So we said, what's it going to be like? We start at the end, kind of work backwards. We start with the Ramban and the Shemesh Shmuel over there. And then we went to page... on page 33, the idea of Tikkun Olam. Yeah? And how to get back to Gan Eden. And really, the Yemos Mashiach is just full circle, we said, from Adam Rishon that we spoke about already. Yeah? We spoke about the various Galios, right? The various Galuses, the Galuts that we've been through. We wrote that down on the board. You expect us to know them. What they refer to? Nah, I don't need years. No. Just, know what they're referred to or referred as. We mentioned a fifth one, but that's not standard Jewish thought, so you can, avoid that right now. And I looked at a very famous Maharal on page 35 from Netzach Yisrael, where he speaks about the idea of 6,000 years. And we actually found a proof in the Torah, a remez, a hint in the Torah to the 6,000 years. Please look into your notes or speak to your friends for that one. And then we spoke at great detail in the Rambam about the who Mashiach is, his various traits. And we spoke about the pre-messianic era in the notes, and we looked at a Mishnah, if you remember, which also will be looked over there. We refer to Mashiach in a number of our prayers. What are those prayers? Where are they? Okay. Then we looked at who is the Mashiach and what the word Mashiach actually means, what it's referring to. And then it was actually Rashi who actually gave also a different translation of the word Mashiach itself. So Mashiach is a process, but it's also a word. Yeah? That is on page 37. There's the Rashi over there. So we said that Mashiach refers to something, a certain process, but it also means something. And that's Rashi on page 37. Good to know that. Come out of a class of Mashiach. I don't know what the word means, according to different opinions.
But I thought Mashiach was a name.
Nope. It's not a name. That's one thing we know. It's not a name.
we know it's a person.
It's an individual, right. But that's not going to be his name.
Right, no, I know.
I mean, it could be, but that's not really what actually means something.
Okay.
Remember, we're talking about the different name, and the Shama, shame, right. Reveals what that thing is.
Do we need to
okay.
Know the possible names?
No. It's a nice thing to know, but it's not something I'm going to test you on that. Okay? Yes, that paper, that thing we spent a lot of time going through that. You better go through that, learn it, read it, understand it. You'll be tested on it. Various personal qualities of Mashiach, the prophet mentions, we looked at, Yeshayahu, on page 39. Where the Mashiach comes from in terms of his descendancy. If you know what Mashiach is all about, you'll know why Mashiach, we don't accept Jesus. Okay, we talk about the certain supernatural power of Mashiach, as it were, which is based upon the prophet Yeshayahu we spent time doing. We looked at the various things Mashiach's got to do with the Rambam, bottom page 40, which is also in the sheets I gave you. What his various jobs are, and which ones prove that he's Mashiach, and which one give us belief that he could be Mashiach. We spoke about the return of the Jewish people, Kibbutz Golios, Eretz Yisrael. We spoke about why that's important for Mashiach. Okay? Why that's an important part of Mashiach. Yeah? So in the sheets, there's two parts of the sheets, the pre-Messianic and the Messianic era. Yeah? So read through those. And mentioned over there as well, which we spent time doing, which we put on the board, is the Mishnah at the end of Masechet Sota, talks about the various signs that we are getting close to Mashiach. Right? Various signs getting close to Mashiach. You want to go through that list. You want to go through that list. So what are the various signs that we're getting close to Mashiach? That's in the notes as well, but we also put it in your personal notes, put on the board as well. Okay, fabulous.
And after what, do you think of
right up to the end.